Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on a profitable servant when we come back. You know, under the terms of a contract called the Old Covenant negotiated by Moses out at Mount Sinai, you and I are entitled to 33 articulable benefits. Benefits such as rain in due season, multiplied gold, silver, herds, flocks, and great wealth. Well, George Bush, when he was president, said that what Americans wanted, though, was jobs, jobs, jobs. But you know, that's not what George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Ben Franklin, Moses, or God had in mind when they wrote our Constitution, our Bill of Rights, or our Ten Commandments. All of these authorities recognize that real wealth is measured in land, cattle, property, gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. It's not measured in jobs, jobs, jobs. And that's because there's no money in employment. The money is in private business. The money is in sales. It's not in public business, and it's certainly not in jobs, jobs, jobs. And that's why I contend that it's time that you and I cashed in on our inheritance and learned how to collect these benefits of the Old Covenant contract, and to collect those benefits in gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. That's called property instead of credit, debt, usury, inflation, and more worthless paper. Now, if you'd like to learn how to do just that, why don't you call for more information on our CD Home School for Adults. And while you're at it, why don't you order our free General Law CD package at the same time? You know, that's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's informative, it's entertaining, it's educational, and best of all, it's free, doesn't cost you anything. And you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, why don't you go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on the email and send us an email request for that free General Law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about employment. We're talking about how to make money. And George Bush, as I mentioned here in our opening, said, what Americans want are jobs, jobs, jobs. I'm not quite sure why Americans want employment, jobs, jobs, jobs. But we've been persuaded that that's what we want. And so we go to college so that we can get an education. And then we can go to work for ExxonMobil. Or we can get a job and go to work for Bank of America or some big corporation somewhere. Seems to be the dream of Americans. Get a job with some big corporation and just live there and work there and live the American dream. That's a house in the suburbs. And we get up and go to work and put in our 8 hours and come back home at night, make a lot of money in the process and just have a good time and enjoy it all. There's another side, though, to this coin, and we call it productivity. When you get to the job, what are you going to do when you get there, and how much are you going to produce? Is there a connecting link here somewhere between what we actually do on the job and the pay that we receive from the job? Whether you go to college and get a job at IBM or you go to work digging ditches, as my old dad used to say, you're going to end up being a ditch digger. You know, if you don't go to college, if you don't go to high school, if you don't get a diploma, you're going to end up being a ditch digger. Those ditch diggers get paid pretty well. I don't know if you knew that or not, but people that operate backhoes and heavy equipment, you know, get paid fair to middling well. When I was a kid, they used to dig those ditches by hand, ditch digger. And then they got some machines out there and started digging ditches with machines. And then now they've got it pretty well down to a science. So ditch digging isn't quite as bad as it used to be, but, you know, you get the point. The point is it's a dead-end job, and that's all you're ever going to amount to, and you're not going to accomplish very much. Well, in the Bible, there's a story here. It's in Matthew chapter 25, starts in verse 14. It's a parable, tells about the parable of the talents. It's a productivity story. And productivity is very important to your employer. When you're working for somebody, whether you're a contractor or whether you're an hourly wage earner, the amount of work, the amount of useful, productive, meaningful work that is accomplished in your 8-hour shift is very important to him. Now, to the average employee, productivity is not important at all. It never comes onto the radar screen. I don't remember ever talking to another fellow employee about productivity or about its relationship with our employer. Employees, they don't know much about economics. They know that water runs downhill and payday's on Friday. But when it comes to useful, productive, and meaningful work, as I mentioned in the last program, talking about the mill, and how much lumber did you get out of that truckload of lumber that came in? How much useful product came out of it? It depends upon the sawyer. And seldom, if ever, does anybody who's working for wages consider the economics of the job, let alone the productivity of the job. So let me show you a little story here about productivity, why it is that the employer will keep one guy over another. After all, that's the guy you want your employer to keep, you rather than the other guy. Because when there's two of you people working on a job and one of you has to go, you want the other guy to be terminated, not you. I've never known of anybody that walked up to the boss and said, "Listen, I know that you're going to terminate one of us, so why don't you go ahead and terminate me, because old Bob over here has got a wife and 5 kids and he needs the work." I haven't seen that. It might happen once in a while. No, most of us would be out there working hard. "Hey, boss, remember me. I'm good old George here." Well, I'm going to show you how to get your boss to notice you and to keep you on the job as opposed to everybody else. Okay? But let's start here with Matthew 25. It's called the Parable of the Talents. This is a productivity story. Listen to this. He says, "The kingdom of heaven is as a man traveling into a far country who called his own servants and delivered unto them his goods. And unto the one he gave 5 talents, to another he gave 2 talents, and to the third one he gave 1 talent. To every man according to his several ability, and then he straightway took his journey." So let's pause here for a moment. The master comes in and he looks at his 3 employees and he says, "You know, this guy over here, I think he's worthy of handling 5 talents. He can probably handle $5,000. And then to the other one, he says, "I don't know, this guy's not quite as good as. I'll give him $2,000. And the third one over, he says, "You know, this guy, he's just a forklift driver. I'm not sure he can handle money at all. Just give him $1,000 and see what he does with it." So each one of the 3 stewards, the 3 servants here, now have a little chunk of change. And in verse 16, he says, "Then he that had received the 5 talents, he went out and he traded with the same, and he made them another 5 talents. So he doubled his money. And in verse 17, "Likewise, he that had received 2, he also gained another 2. So he went out and he doubled his money. But he that had received the 1 talent, he went and digged in the earth, and he hid his Lord's money. He buried it in a hole in the ground. And after a long time, the Lord of those servants cometh and reckoned with them. And so he that had received the 5 talents came, and he brought another 5 talents, saying, Lord, you delivered unto me 5 talents, and behold, I have beside those gained 5 talents more. And his Lord said unto him, Well done, you good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a few things. I will make you ruler over many things. Enter thou into the joy of the Lord. And then in verse 22 he says, And also that had received 2 talents came and said, Well, Lord, you delivered unto me 2 talents. Behold, I have gained 2 other talents beside them. And his Lord said unto him, Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a few things. I will make you ruler over many things. Enter thou into the joy of the Lord. Now when he had received, or when he that had received the 1 talent came and said, Well, Lord, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you have not sown, and gathering where you have not strawed. And I was afraid. And then I went and I hid your talent in the earth. Lo, there thou hast that which is thine. Here's your talent back. Now his Lord answered and said unto him, You wicked and slothful servant. Now you knew that I reaped where I sowed not, and that I gathered where I have not strawed. You ought therefore to have put my money to the exchangers, then at my coming I should have received mine own with usury. Take therefore the talent from him, and give it unto him which has 10 talents. And unto every man that has shall be given, and he shall have more abundance. But from him that has not shall be taken even that which he has. And cast you the unprofitable servant into outer darkness, and there shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Doesn't sound like a very good end, does it? So let's take a look and analyze this a little bit and see where we're going with this. Talking about productivity here. The employer, in this case, he comes up to one guy, he gives him 5 talents, $5,000 or whatever the monetary value is, and he says, Now take this, occupy till I return. Let's see what you can do with this. And he goes out and he buys, sells, and trades. He does some business. And when he gets all through, he's doubled his master's money. His master comes back. And he says, Here's 10 talents, boss. I took your 5 talents and I went out and I made 5 more. So he comes back and he says, You know, you're a pretty good worker. And so what I'm going to do for you is I'm going to make you a supervisor. Well, I'm going to give you a promotion here in the company. Second guy comes along. He doesn't give him as much, but he gives him a pretty good job there too. I'll make you the lead man. But the third guy, notice this third guy who has 1 talent. He says, "Take the talent that I gave to this guy over here and give it to the guy that now has 10. So he's going to have 11. And the guy over here that's got 1 is going to end up with nothing. Now this does not follow union rules. That's an unfair labor practice, isn't it? Think about that. I mean, in today's society, if you did a thing like that, why, you'd have all kinds of complaints on you. You'd probably end up in litigation. It certainly doesn't follow the communist rule that calls from each according to his ability and to each according to his need. So under the communist formula, we'd say, well, gee, you got 10 talents over here. So what we're going to do is we're going to take 4 of your talents and give it to the guy with 1 talent so that now he has 5 and you have 6. Which is, you know, more than you deserve anyway, probably. And we're going to even this out. I notice our President Barack Obama says he wants to spread the wealth. And that's the way they do that. They spread the wealth. But this boss here in the Bible, you know, this God of the Bible, he's a little bit different breed of cat, wouldn't you say? He was looking at productivity. Well, what did this guy actually produce? He looked at the third guy. He says, you know, he didn't steal from me. That's a good point. The third guy over here who had the 1 talent, he didn't steal it, run off, you know, and blow it down at Flo's, but he didn't work with it, and he didn't produce anything from it. He didn't put any innovation to the project, whatever it was. So you get three employees here, and all three of them had an equal opportunity. And they all went out and they worked best they could. And when it was all said and done, we're going to terminate one of the three. So which one of the three do you think we're going to terminate? Let's put the shoe on the other foot here for a minute. Let's suppose we got a seniority problem here. The guy with the most seniority is the guy who got the one talent, the guy who's second in line got two talents, and the guy who's the newcomer on the job, just showed up, has the least seniority. He's the guy we give the five talents to. So from the boss's perspective, the guy that's got the most seniority, been here with the company for 30 years, goes out, he takes his one talent, hides it in the earth, doesn't produce anything with it, and comes back and says, "You can't get rid of me because I've got seniority." Is that the guy that the boss really wants to keep? Well, in a union shop, he has to, whether he wants to or not. And I told you that in the last program. Now, there's another side to this story over here. And I said last time, let's take a look at my experience with International Harvester. When I left the farm, I thought I'd move to the city and cut a fat hog in the back. After all, in the city, they paid $3 an hour. Which was, you know, 8-hour day. That's $24 a day. But on the farm, I got paid $10 a day in board and room. Would you rather have $10 a day in board and room and work from 4 o'clock in the morning until 6 o'clock at night? 14 hours a day. Or would you rather move to the city, work 8 hours a day, get paid $3 an hour, $24 a day, more than double? Yes, sirree, Bob, that's what I did. I said, "You can take this job and shove it. I'm going to the city where I got cement to keep my feet clean, and then I got an apartment, and I got real, real pay." Now, we've moved to the city, and I'm living here in the city, and I'm just having a great time. I'm making lots of money, top of my trade. Everything's going along fine. Well, one day they had some trucks come in from Pacific Intermountain Express, PIE. And International had sold this big trucking company 5,000 trucks in 1965. It was the first year that they had what they called the CO4000 aluminum cab truck. Now, prior to that, they had steel cabs, and on top of the steel cab, they had an air conditioner, and this air conditioner was held up nicely by this steel cab. But when they changed over to the aluminum cabs, they put the air conditioner up on top of the cab, and bouncing up and down the road, it broke through the cab. So they needed to have a reinforcing strip go across there. So the engineering department back in Fort Wayne, Indiana, came up with a gusset that went across there. Now, this thing had to be welded in, and it had to be welded with aluminum. Now, aluminum welding was something fairly new. They called it heliarc welding. And since our shop was in Oakland and PIE was located in Emeryville, next town down, why, our shop got the contract to rebuild these cabs in 5,000 trucks. All right, so now you got the parameters there. That's pretty good. And they got paid $989 per truck. So, you know, you get 5,000 trucks to do. 5,000 times $989 is $4,945,000. So our shop is going to get paid by another division of International about $5 million in round numbers for doing these 5,000 trucks. Now, in our shop, we had one heliarc machine and one man that knew how to use it. His name was Old Tom. He had about 30 years with the company at that time. So he'd been around for a good long time there with the company. He had lots of seniority. He got a month off with vacation. And, of course, in those days with me, just being a new kid on the block, I only got 1 week. So you see, start off, you only get a week for the first 5 years. And then from 5 years to 20 years, you get 2 weeks, and then from 20 years on, you get 4 weeks. So you get more, you know, when you're a good union man. Now, Tom could do one of these trucks in 40 hours. Took 40 man hours for Tom to do one of these trucks. You had to get into it and take the seats out and take the headliner down, and then you had to cut a slot in both sides and slip this thing in and hold it up there and then weld it in and then fix the two slots and put the headliners back in, put the seats back in, and it was quite a little operation. Well, I was watching old Tom one day and watching him do that, and I said, wow, I'd like to learn how to run that Heliarc machine. That could be very valuable to me in years to come. And my old uncle, Buster, he told me that I should learn every trade that I could. He always encouraged me. He said, you know, if you got a chance to learn a trade, you learn it. So I wanted to learn this welding trade. And I went through the ag shop, and, you know, I could stick two pieces of steel together. But this aluminum, it was a gas Heliarc welder. You know, it was an automatic wire feed welder. It was modern technology at its best, you know, in 1965. And so I went to Tom and I said, hey, could you use some help? And he said, you bet. And so he went to the shop foreman and said, yeah, I'd like to have some help. And that guy Gordon, that kid, that skinny kid, he'd kind of like to help me, and I'd like him to help me. And so they just transferred me over there to Tom so that I could light his cigarettes and pour his coffee and, you know, just kind of be his gopher. And so here I was, Tom's gopher, and I was working hard there. And in fact, I worked so hard, Tom could kind of sit back and direct operations, and the kid would just do it all. So before long, I was welding it and taking out the seeds and the headliner, and old Tom was drinking coffee and directing operations, and he was happy, and I was happy. And so coming from the farm and all, I was always interested in productivity, get out there and hustle. Now, remember old Tom, now he's in his 50s or 60s. He's an old man, and I'm just a young punk kid. And so old men move slow, young men run. Young men are fast, they're quick. And so I was very quick. And in fact, I could do those trucks just because of the speed involved. I could do one of those trucks in about 3 days' time using Tom's modalities and all. And so at the end of the week, we wouldn't quite have two out, but we'd come pretty close to it, the two of us working together, which was no better productivity than Tom. Tom working by himself could turn out one a week. With two of us working, we needed to turn out two a week, and we couldn't quite do that. Not quite. So I looked at that productivity problem in the same way that I'd look at it on the farm, and I said, you know, this is unproductive. This is an unprofitable servant here. You got one guy turning them out one a week. You got two guys over here working on the same truck. So I suggested that we bring two trucks in, and that we, you know, Tom, you go to work on one truck, and I'll go to work on the second truck. And we've only got one welding machine, but then that's more than enough. When I'm ready to weld, we only have about an hour's worth of welding, and we'll get the welding done. And when your welding is done, then you can put the seats in, the headliners, and all that. So we did that. Now, Tom was turning out his one truck, and I was doing the heavy work on both jobs. But when the two of us were working on two trucks at a time, now our productivity went way up. Because remember, I could almost turn out two. Tom could turn out one by bringing two trucks into the shop and working on them at the same time. We got our productivity up to where we were almost turning out four trucks per week. Almost. Not quite, but almost. Now that was a boost in productivity, because now the company is paying the two of us. Instead of turning out two trucks a week, we're now turning out nearly four trucks a week. But I want to remind you that we have 5,000 of these trucks to turn out. 5,000. Now the PIE company is turning out these trucks also in their shops. they're getting paid that same $989, but that $989 leaves the international company and goes to the PIE company. If we could keep that into the or in the international company, it would be better for our corporation, wouldn't it? So one day I was musing, you know, and on my weekends off, and I got to thinking about the problem of putting that gusset in. And we had a thing there called a porta power. That's a little hydraulic ram with a long pipe on the end of it that you use to straighten bodies out, you know, in a body shop. And so I got to thinking about that, and I said, you know, I need to spring that cab about 1 inch in order to get that gusset in. And if I could do that, I wouldn't have to make the two cuts. I wouldn't have to cut the holes in the sidewalls to get the gusset in. I could spread it out, and then I could force it up in there, which would save me several hours of cutting and welding. And so I got to thinking about that, and I mentioned it to Tom, and he said, oh, no, we don't want to do anything like that. You just stick with the program, son. And so, you know, the old-timer, you know, he said, hey, just stick with the program. And so I got to thinking about it, and one day I mentioned it to our lead man, and I said, Mr. Lead Man over here, would it be all right with you if I used a porta power to spread that apart? And he was an old Canadian guy, an old union man, and he said, no, 1,000 times no, don't you do such a thing. Well, you just stick with the program there, son. Just you know, drink your coffee, and the coffee break truck comes, and do your thing. And so I said, okay. And so Tom went on vacation. And so now there's only one of us doing these trucks. Now, I could turn out two trucks a week with a little practice by now. I'm doing my two trucks a week, and by helping Tom with his work, I could get him to where he could almost turn out two trucks a week. So we were cooking, you know, we're going right along there. Now, Tom goes on vacation, and all of a sudden our productivity drops by about half. And so I went out and I brought a truck in, and I was over in a corner working by myself, and so I took the porta power out and I went over and I spread the cab, stuck her in there. When I got through, I was done in about 4 hours or less. And so I tried another one, and it worked twice, and then I tried a third one, and it worked three times, and boy, that was pretty heady. I said, okay. So they would bring these trucks in usually on a Friday. And they bring in five or six trucks at a time. So they brought these trucks in, and so the following Monday, I went out, and I brought a truck in, put it over in my corner, and I knocked it out in about, maybe 2, maybe 3 hours. And so I went out and got another truck, and I went out and got another truck, and I went out and got another truck, and then got another truck. And so pretty soon I finished those six trucks that were out there, and I walked into the boss, and I said, now, boss, I have finished those six trucks out there. Now, he knew that it took about a week to do those six trucks. See? Now, all of a sudden, here's this one guy. Two guys are gone. Now, this one guy comes in here, and he's got these trucks knocked out in about 2 days. See, I'm knocking these trucks out about every 3 hours. I could easily do two trucks a day and have work done on the third one by myself. Now, if we'd have followed this program through, two guys working on this thing over here could turn out six trucks a week, easy, probably eight. And then if we had a couple of helpers in here and we got this thing lined up, I figured that we could probably turn out around 20 trucks a week with four people and one Heliarc machine. That's what I had scoped out. Well, my boss, the lead man there, he went out and checked those trucks, and sure enough, they were done. And he said, well, how did you do that? And I told him about that porta power, how I had increased my productivity by more than double, and that if we had this thing set up right, that we could do a whole lot more of these trucks. And I told him I thought we could do 20 trucks a week, two of us, Tom and I, if we had a couple of helpers, gophers, you know, taking, you know, some of the moving the trucks back and forth and one thing and another. So, he got mad. And he went up and reported me to the management. Now, and he reported me to the union. Now the management came back and they listened to my tale and they said, wow, that's really good. And they liked it. I said, well, I'm probably going to get a promotion here. I'm going to get a raise. Well, I'm going to go someplace in this company. But I discovered that I was called up to a union meeting. I had to go out and go on trial here at the union meeting. They said that I was violating union rules, and they wanted to fire me. But the company interceded for me, and they saved my job, but they never gave me any more money. They never gave me a promotion. But when it was all said and done, the company said, well, you can continue to use the PortaPower tool to turn out more, but you're not going to get any recognition, and you're not going to get any more pay because, you know, in a union shop, you know, everybody gets paid the same, you know, from each according to his ability and to each according to his need, you know. Everybody shares the wealth. So I learned a valuable lesson there. Then in a union shop, there is no recognition for productivity, and there's no room to grow. And one day I woke up and I said, you know, they sell my time for $12 an hour. And they pay me $3. Now, if this company can sell my time for $12 an hour, why can't I sell my time for $12 an hour? I mean, I figured I could go open up a shop somewhere and sell my time to International or somebody else and say, listen, you're paying $989 to do this job. Let me take that job for half that. I'll do it for $500. That's what productivity is all about. That's what profitability is all about. How do you do that job faster? How do you do that job with less material? Or how do you do that job faster with less resources? Now, we used to talk a lot in this country about productivity and productivity gains. And on the farm, that's what we do every day, day in and day out. How do you feed these cows faster? How do you do this faster? How do you do it with less labor input? You know, how can you feed more cows with less labor? And so I looked at that job and I said, I think you can take this job and shove it. And I'm going to take off on my own and I'm going to go out and I'm going to work for $12 an hour instead of $3. And I'm going to concentrate on my productivity. And the reason I bring this to your attention is that while International was very concerned about productivity and very concerned about me and my increased productivity, there wasn't anything that they could do for me or with me. I was locked into a dead-end job because of the union. Now, of course, most of you union guys would say, well, so what? You know, we got union rules, and if we don't follow the union rules, the company takes advantage of us, and blah, blah, blah. Okay. Yeah, you got a point there, and I don't deny it. But moral of the story is, if we don't increase the productivity, let's look at the problem here. You got 5,000 trucks. And if we do those 5,000 trucks at the rate of one a week divided by 52 weeks, it's going to take us 96 years to do the job. Now, how long do those trucks last? 5 years maximum. Now, the average Joe Sixpack would say, well, that's not our problem. And you're right, it's not your problem. But you see, if you were the purchasing manager of PIE and you bought 5,000 trucks and then you couldn't get them fixed, would you buy International trucks next time or Mack trucks next time? And that's why we Americans are having a hard time competing around the world, because we have it in our minds, that's not our problem, and we don't need to be concerned about that. And so, all of a sudden, we find Saab, or Toyota, or Mercedes, or somebody else coming in here selling their cars, and they sell a better product for less money, because their productivity is higher. Yeah, that's right, it's not our problem. Let somebody else worry about it. But now we're engaged in a Great Depression. And because we didn't concern ourselves with it back in the 1980s and 1990s, well, now we can concern ourselves with it because now we're about to lose our jobs. And I just wanted to point out to you that for you people that are still working, the boss is looking at your productivity. And the higher your productivity is, the greater your chances of keeping your job. I mean, that's just where the nuts and bolts are. All right, now I got to give you a reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law. From the scriptural perspective, now it's 8 schools in all. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, all of which can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse and recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. However, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program, they're mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, the beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about a profitable servant. People will call here and say, well, I lost my job, or I'm afraid I'm going to lose my job. Or you're listening to Brian Williams and Katie Couric, and they say, well, the number one concern of Americans today is, will they be able to continue working? And we're in a downward spiral. The downward spiral derives from the fact that you and I are not out buying cars. And the reason we're not buying cars is because we don't have confidence that next month or next year we will be working. We might lose our job. So we stop buying cars, and when we stop buying cars, it guarantees that the guy that's building the cars is going to lose his job, or a lot of them. Now, when those guys lose their jobs, they're not going to be buying the goods and services that you produce. And that guarantees that you are going to lose your job, or a lot of people around you are going to lose their jobs. So it's a built-in guaranteed spiral, or a race to the bottom. And it's already begun, and it's not going to stop. But it doesn't have to affect you if you're the best worker on the job. And I worked in the woods for many years, and when I worked in the woods, they measure your productivity as a choker setter by how many logs do you put on the landing in a day's time. Now, a cat, that is a big machine. For most of you people out there, probably don't know what a cat is, but it's a big track-laying machine. It runs on tracks, and it's called a tractor. And it's got a blade on the front of it for making roads and skid trails. And then behind it, it's got a big winch on there with a cable and then a drum and cable. And we go out there and we tie these cables onto logs, and then we hook them onto a big hook, and then this cat drags these logs onto the landing where they're loaded on trucks and taken to a sawmill. And, of course, the guy that's out here setting these chokers, he's called the choker setter, and you have to have one of those guys working behind each one of these tractors, and so there'll be three or four of these tractors on a side. They call those a side. And then at the end of the day, the choker said, well, I turned in 28 turns today, or I turned in 26 turns today, or I turned in 15 turns today. So a turn is one trip to the landing. Now, in all the years that I worked as a choker setter, I was always number one on my side. And except on one job, I was always number two, because there was a young fellow there that was always better, always faster than I was. Sometimes I could beat him in a day's time, depends upon how steep the terrain is, and then we would kid each other, well, yeah, but you were working on flat ground, you know. Well, I was working on a hillside, you know, or whatever. But we were always competitive, and there was always this spirit of competition. Not just between me and this other guy, Dave, but, you know, among all the choker setters, and the cat skinners do the same thing. And what that does is it sharpens everybody. It keeps everybody on their toes, you know, at the end of the day, you know. You turned in 15 turns, and everybody else turned in 25, 26, 28. That makes you look pretty poor, doesn't it? How come you're only turning in 15 turns? Now, if you had to make a cut, and you've got four cats working on a side, and you're going to cut down your production by 25%, or you're going to eliminate one cat, well, who are you going to eliminate? The guy that's turning in 28 turns a day, 26 turns a day, 24 turns a day, or the guy that's turning in 15 turns a day? You know, that's just, you don't have to be real smart to figure that out, that the guy that's going to get cut is the guy that produces the least. That's all. All right, so your job then is to be the guy who produces more than anybody else. And if you can do that, when the boss goes to make cuts, he's going to cut the least profitable, the least productive segments of the operation. That's what he's going to cut. So when big corporations, you know, are making cuts, they take a look at a division and they say, this division's unprofitable. Let's sell it. Let's get rid of it. Let's close it down. When a big corporation does that, 5,000 people lose their jobs when they decide to cut that back. Now, if the 5,000 people that were there had increased their productivity by 10% each, it probably would have made the difference between being profitable and unprofitable. But you see, 5,000 people do not think in mass, how can I increase my productivity, especially if it's a union job? Now, let's take a look at a couple of numbers here, because when we're watching the news, we see these big corporations, and they're laying off 5,000 here and 10,000 there, and they're going to merge with this company and eliminate 14,000 jobs over there. Well, here's the way the job market is divided up. 65% of all the jobs in America are with companies that have from 1 to 100 employees. That's right. The guy who's running the pizza shop down here and has four or five people in his store, the McDonald's store down here that has 10 or 15 people working in it. You see, 65% of all the employment in America is made up of these companies called small business. 25% of all business done in this country and employment as a result of it is done by the big corporations like General Motors or Ford with 345,000 employees. They represent 25%. And then government represents about 10%. So you take all the government employees, they represent about one worker out of every 10, and about one worker out of every 2.5 is represented by the big corporations, and then 6.5 workers are working for these little companies. Now, what we never hear is this. 10,000 companies cut one employee. See, that doesn't make news. But one company cuts 10,000 employees. Now, that makes news. And if you're working for one of these big companies, and they're going to cut 10,000 employees, and you're working in a union shop, there's not much you can do. And the reason there's not much you can do is because they don't look at your productivity individually. They just look at the productivity of the unit, the division. And if it's not making money, they just cut the division out. They just cut the whole thing out. They just close the whole factory. You know, when General Motors is going to close the whole factory, you're going to go just like everybody else. That tells you a little something right there. You're better off working out here in a company that has less than 100 employees. Instead of being a little fish in a big pond, you want to be a big fish in a little pond. Okay, that's rule number one. We like being big fish in little ponds. Now, when I was first starting out, I was 15 years old looking for a summer job. So I went out to an employment agency, Bud Clark Employment Agency in Arcata. And I said, I'm looking for a summer job. And he said, well, kid, place for you is to get a job bucking bales, hauling hay, general farm work out in the countryside someplace working on a dairy. And I said, okay. And he says, let me send you out to this guy. And I went out to that guy, and he said, well, have you ever worked on a farm before? No, sir. Well, you know, have you got any experience? No, sir. Well, then I don't want to hire you. So my very first job interview didn't go well. And I said, well, we got to fix that. So I went back to Bud Clark, and I told him, and he said, well, let me send you out to this guy over here. So he sent me out to another guy. And I went out with a job interview. And I told the guy that I want to work real hard, and I'm gonna learn, and I'm a fast learner, and I can do this. And he said, nah, sorry, kid, if you didn't get any experience, I don't think I want you. So I went back to Bud Clark, and I said, you know, I've got pretty good experience. Why don't you send me out here to one of these other guys? So he sent me out to Frank Rocha down in Lolita. So I got on the Mendenhall bus, and I went down to Lolita, and I got off, and I had to walk down Lighthouse Road a couple of miles. And as I'm walking down the road, there was an old man. His name was Walter Bugnuda. And old Walter was out cutting his lawn with a scythe, as before we had lawnmowers, you know. So he's out there scything his front yard, and so I stopped. It was kind of hot that day, you know. It was in summertime. And so I stopped, and I said, how far is it to Frank Roach's, do you know? And he came over to the fence, and he said, why do you want to know? And I said, well, he's looking for a hired man, and I'm down here to apply for the job. And old Walter, he looked at me, shook his head a little bit, and he said, son, you might as well just turn around, go on back to town, take the bus back to Eureka, and forget this Rocha thing, because Rocha still farms with horses. He said, that's the toughest place in the valley. See, this old man, he ran a dairy there too, and he knew that a kid from the city trying to get a job down here on the farm and without any experience, didn't know what he was doing. And then he's going to go to work for the toughest place in the valley? Well, that isn't going to fly. So I thanked him, and I said, well, okay, I'm going to go down and talk to the man anyway. And so I went on down the road, and Rocha was down in the field, and I went down and talked to him, and he looked at me with just total disdain. I mean, I must have really looked ugly to him. And he listened to me, and I told him that I was experienced and I knew all this stuff. And so he said, well, go on up to the barn, and I'll bring the cows up. And now he had two hired men. And so we got up to the barn, and I was up there waiting for him. And so he says, well, go in there with Tony and start milking. And so I watched Tony, and he picked up the bucket and the head. And so I picked up a bucket and head, and I followed him. And I was watching this guy, and what he did, I did. See, whatever he did, I did. I told Rocha, I said, I'm a milker. I'm experienced. I know all the ropes. So it didn't take very long for everybody there to see that this kid really didn't know one end from another. So the Rocha, with disgust, took me back into the pump room, and he really tore into me. You know, he just he said, you know, you come out here, you lied to me, you told me you were a milker, and blah blah blah, and he says, hell, you don't know which end is up. And he asked me, he said, why'd you do that? And so I told him about my bad experience. I said, I come out here, and I'm trying to get a job, and I tell the guy the truth, and I say, no, I don't have any experience, but I want to learn. And he says, no, I ain't going to hire you. And so I figured, well, I better come out here and tell you that I know what I'm doing. And I said, you know, I'm smarter now. He said, and I said to him, I said, now, I got one of those milking machines on. And I said, now the next guy, I'll get a little bit further, and the next guy, I'll get a little bit further, and pretty soon I'll get some experience. And because I was insistent, because I didn't come there to play games, I came there to work, I came there to learn, and the thing that's holding me back is that because I don't have any experience, I can't get a job. Well, excuse me, boys and girls, but unless you get a job, how in the hell are you going to get any experience? I mean, you know, one hand washes the other. So old Rocha, he said, you know, you sound like you're kind of spunky there, kid. And I said, well, you know, I need to get experience, and I can't get experience if I don't have a job. And so he said, well, you know, you're right. You can't get experience without a job. But the reason we don't want to hire people without experience is that you come out here, and then as soon as you learn, then you leave and you go someplace that pays more money. And we end up paying the costs of training you, and then when we get you trained, then you go out here and we don't get our money back out of you. That's why we don't want you. See, I didn't understand that. And I said, well, why don't you pay me what you think I'm worth? Or why don't I work for you for nothing? And why don't you teach me what I need to know? And then why don't you pay me what you think I'm worth until I'm competent and capable, and then you can give me full wage? And he liked that. He liked that. He said, you'd work here for free then, huh? I said, yeah, I'll work for you for nothing until I learn. He said, okay, kid, here's what I'll do. I'll put you to work cleaning the barn, hauling milk, and let's see how you work. So he did. So I worked there for a couple of days, and one day he came up to me. He said, I'm going to pay you $175 a month in board and room. Now, $250 was the normal pay. He's going to dock me $75 for being a punk kid, which from my point of view is wonderful, because now I got a job. Now I can learn. Next year, I'll be able to get $250. But for right now, I need to learn my craft, and I've got to pay to learn how to do this. He's gonna make $75 a month teaching me. He's gonna pay me a little less, and I'm not gonna produce like an experienced man. So I went to work there, and I'm working away, and I'm cleaning the barn. I got all the nastiest jobs and the hardest work, and so I'm out here working. Well, as I was progressing along, I took a look and I noticed that in cleaning the barn, the cows, you know, they would do their business. You know, they'd defecate as they were walking out of the barn. So pretty soon I'm using my head here a little bit, and I started letting the cows out down at the far end by the door and driving them out. And so instead of having 5 wheelbarrow loads of manure to clean out of the barn every day, I ended up with about 2, one on each side. I was working on increasing my productivity. So one morning, and I was about ready to strike, and I got up from breakfast, 10 o'clock, and I ran out to the barn, and I scraped the barn, and I cleaned out both sides. Now, the other two guys that would do the other barn work, they'd get done in about an hour. Normally, it would take me 2 hours to clean both sides of the barn, an hour on each side. Roach would take about an hour to wash the milking equipment. And so I finished before everybody else, and I walked into the milk house, and I said, okay, I'm ready. What's next? And the old Rocha turned around to me and says, clean the other side. I mean, he yelled at me. And I said, I'm through both sides. He stopped.
He walked over to one side and he looked down that barn. He walked over to the other side. He looked down that barn. Now, he spoke Portuguese, and he walked over to these other two guys who were also Portuguese, and I don't know exactly what he said, but I think there was a lot of four-letter expletives. I mean, he read those two guys the riot act. Skinny punk kid comes in here, cleans the barn out in 1 hour, and he said, you guys are always taking 2 hours. And so, here's the moral to that story. I increased my productivity by looking at the job that needed to be done, and then I worked on the problem, and I solved the problem. Have the cows do their business outside instead of inside, and we got less to clean out. And I figured out a way to get the cows out of the barn without doing their business in the barn. They're doing it outside. Now, small thing, but very important. Because now the boss comes up to me a couple days later and he says, I'm going to raise your pay to $250. And that's because after I'd been there for about 2 or 3 weeks, I could perform as well as or better than either of the other two guys who were getting $250 a month. Now I could see that I was equal to them, and now the boss could see that I was equal to them. And now I was experienced. How long does it take to get this experience to do this job? It doesn't take 2 years at the community college. Let me tell you, boys and girls, when you get out on the job, if you can't learn that job in about 1 week, 2 weeks tops, and then compete with those that are there, you're in the wrong business. It doesn't take years to learn a new trade. It takes about a week, maybe two. Now, if you pay attention to your job and your job description, can you figure out some way that you can do it faster, better, easier, cheaper, and make your boss a profit? Because that extra hour a day that I'm not cleaning the barn, I'm doing something else that's making the boss money. Now, keep this in mind. Your employer is not there to create jobs. Your employer, if he had his druthers, would eliminate all employees. He would have zero employees. If he could run his business, he would, without anybody. Employees cost money. It's what we call overhead. Now, your boss is interested in making money, making profit. Useful, productive, meaningful work is what we're interested in. We're not interested in, does it take 2 hours to clean the barn or 1 hour? We're interested in how can we do this job faster so that we can get on to the next job so that we can create more real wealth, because all wealth comes out of the ground. And it's produced by the labor of the laboring man who's working with those raw materials and turning them into something that's useful and productive that somebody else wants and is willing to work and pay for. That's what your boss is looking for. And if you can provide that, then he's going to keep you in place of somebody else. It's just that simple. No big mystery. And it has to do with productivity. And every one of you, I don't care who you are or where you're working, can increase your productivity by 10%. If you just moved faster, you could increase it by 10%. Just by quitting your coffee breaks, for crying out loud. You can increase by 30 minutes a day. You know, now if you're taking your coffee breaks and you're showing up at 8 o'clock and leaving at 4:30, you're still an unprofitable servant because you're doing just exactly what's required of you and nothing more. Tuck that one away in your heart, and we'll talk about it next time. Yeah, I'm out of time. I gotta leave it right there and remind you that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review. Sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact desk, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and it can all be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody. And good night, friends.